Well, folks, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition, and we have a strange configuration. David Cheesham is running the board. Welcome, David.
Well, thank you.
And we have on the phone, on one phone, Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Hey, Mike, it's good to be here. I'm going to apologize for the background noise. I'm getting my tires changed over.
Oh, that's okay. The modern technology works. And in the studio with David is Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Mike, Zaz, and David.
And I am calling from Anchorage from a conference in here, but we can still make this happen. Zaz, you were prolific this past week. You had not one, but two major articles that I perused. One, let's start the one that dealt with the port, the Matsuburo's port at Point McKenzie. How about a quick summary of that?
Sure. So I'm realizing that some of the same adjectives I used to describe the ferry, Susitna, I now have to try to avoid using for the port. This story was about repairs that the assembly authorized at the barge dock, which is one of several facilities at the borough port on Point McKenzie. And it's a dock that gets very little traffic. The peak traffic, there were 9 vessels called there 2 or 3 years ago, but that was affiliated with an offshore project. There is no regular source of revenue from that barge dock, but the borough has poured in, it's been almost $3 million so far, with another almost $2 million yet to come if plans come to fruition. And the issue is with the open pile, the sheet pile construction, and some erosion that was determined at one point to be an emergency because the barge dock was in danger of failure at some point unless the erosion was stopped. And so this $500,000 appropriation, which is a quote-unquote loan from various borough funds, including the Susitna's Enterprise Fund, because who needs that anymore?
Irony there.
Yes, irony there. Is all going in to fix this dock that just isn't getting any use right now. And so, to me, one of the most interesting topics that came up during that conversation was that at one point, Assembly Member Jim Sykes, there were two Assembly members questioning money on this barge dock, and one was George McKee, who said, you know, basically likened it to the ferries who sit in a pouring a lot of money into something that doesn't make any revenues. Just it turns into a huge drain on the budget. And then Assembly Member Jim Sykes said, you know, do we have a plan to mothball the port? You know, if at some point there's nothing coming in, how can we kind of save it from further destruction without spending money just operating it? And the borough manager sort of stammered, yes. But when I talked with him yesterday, it sounds like there is, because there are no current plans to mothball the port, it doesn't sound like there is a plan to mothball the port. I mean, it was kind of a silly conversation in that it's not happening right now, and if mothballing a port is at some point down the road in the works, there would need to be RFPs, there would need to be engineering design, all that kind of stuff. But I think it was newsworthy in that the question is being asked at all.
Sure.
How do you mothball a port?
I don't know. Man. I don't know if you cover it in a dome. I mean, it's probably a cross between spending as little much money on overhead, you know, electric insurance, and while kind of safeguarding it from Kinnick Arm. It's located in a pretty current heavy place, which has been a hit against it in the past. It's a hard, as I understand it, it's a hard dock to get into. It's a hard port to get into because the currents are pretty strong in the area.
And I was there for that discussion at the assembly meeting, and what struck me in particular was that I did not hear, and Zaz, correct me, anything in the way of concrete proposals for improvement in the flow through of traffic through the port and some income that would be derived.
Yeah, no, the only thing on the horizon that's significant is Astoria Forest Products out of Oregon. And some kind of a wood chip venture. I mean, even the borough manager is saying, well, it's kind of 50-50. In my experience over these years now with people talking about revenue at the port, including the outgoing port director, Mark Van Dongen, is Oh no, there's big stuff. It's right around the corner, and you know, year after year, you hear this. And you know, I guess in his defense, Mark Van Dongen, you know, he points out regularly that it's really hard to drum up development at a port without this rail extension that's now stalled 2/3 of the way through. It's hundreds of millions of dollar construction. But yeah, I mean, borough taxpayers and borough watchers are getting increasingly frustrated, especially given the cuts to schools, you know, flat spending. There is expected to be an increase in the mill rate this time around. So, and that dictates our property taxes, which are going up, I think, still because of assessments. Although I'm not sure where assessments are this year.
Okay, Mark or David, do you have anything to add to that conversation?
I've got another question. What is the thinking behind the idea of mothballing the port? Is it for future use, or is it for the end game being, you know, dismantling and getting out of the port business?
I mean, my sense from Sykes was that it was a future use question, but it was just, you know, he tends to ask provoking questions. Sometimes I think that's what it was. But yeah, the sense I got was that how do we spend as little much money as possible if we go that route to keep the port kind of physically protected while not spending any more money than we have to on it until we get some revenue.
Right. Well, the hardest business decision to make is when to cut your losses.
Right.
That's maybe the kind of the spirit of that conversation.
And there will be a new port director. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mark Van Dongen is retiring a week from today, I believe.
Do we know who the new director is?
No.
And is there any talk of finishing the rail link?
No. You know, the last I heard was January, where the port was going after that federal grant for $75 million, which is not, there's more than $100 million still needed.
Wow.
Okay, well, Zaz, I know we can shift to another topic, one that was interesting in some different ways, and that has to do with the first distribution of marijuana outside of Wasilla. Talk a little bit about that one. That was curious to me.
Yeah, well, and that was the first retail marijuana store to open with locally grown marijuana outside of it's right near Wasilla. There has been there's a place in Houston, Denali 420, that's been open for some time and is also selling locally grown. But yeah, this is, you know, kind of closest to the urban center, such as it is, of Matsu on Kinnick Goose Bay Road, and a place called Green Degree, which is co-owned by a guy who made made his money on the slope, a young guy though, like 20 something, Kirby Coleman, and so they opened on Thursday, yesterday, which for those of you listening on Monday, and they opened on April 20, which is 420, the unofficial pot smokers holiday. There's, I don't know, a number of different theories as to why that's an unofficial holiday, but. But try it sometime. You'll find when you look at a clock, it's often 4:20, at least twice a day. and so these guys opened on 4:20, or opened at least with, you know, marijuana that you could buy on 4:20 as part of that holiday. They had a party planned with a bouncy house and live music and all this stuff. And at some point, I think this week, I never got an answer from the state, the Marijuana Control Board and staff, it started sending out notices to marijuana retailers saying, you guys can't celebrate, you know, this holiday. You can't that may run afoul of state statute that talks about not having, you know, these kind of promotional events that could be linked to the sale of marijuana. And so, you know, Green Degree was just the closest example of it. There were a number of businesses in Anchorage, I think, that sort of ignored the edict or got around it. But here in Anchorage, sorry about the background noise. Here in Matsu, Green Degree did have a bouncy house, did have music, did have a food truck, but it was on the property next door, where I think they were planning to have it all along, which is owned by somebody else who gave them permission and then put on the party. And so, you know, I walked up and was sort of surprised to see the party going on, and got in Jesse, an employee. I said, hey, you guys wait, are you just, you know, like ignoring what they told you? He's like, no, no, we had nothing to do with this. This party that magically sprang up next door for our opening day.
Reaction.
Go ahead.
Reactions, David or Mark?
And it's just, I think, you know, one more step in outing the industry, so to speak, and having people, you know, comfortable with this new legal form of commerce. Still have a ways to go, obviously. I know there was a social club in Anchorage that shut down a day or two ago, running afoul of current regulations. So I think we're seeing a work in progress, and obviously hopefully kinks will be worked out, and everybody will be in a better place for it.
Okay, David.
Well, it's just interesting that the state has a population that is for this, but we have a political culture that it seems is an illegal culture that is creating regulations at every step to make it difficult and to make it impossible to make it work for the state.
And in defense of the, you know, no party or no, you know, can't have a festivity to celebrate that holiday, it sounds sort of in line with the idea where legalization initiated, that let's regulate this like we do alcohol, and there are laws on the books against happy hour promotions, you know, 2-for-1 drinks, can't do that anymore. So it seems to be sure in line with that kind of regulation.
Okay. Well, we had not so long ago, it seems, only last week, a large kerfuffle about the Pioneer Home. And I'm curious, Azaz, is there any follow-up, has that reverberated away to lay in wait for people when they begin to come back to how to implement cuts? Anything out there at all about the Pioneer Home issue?
Yeah, I was a little busy on other stuff this week and didn't dig back into Pioneer Homes. Our reporter in Juneau, Nat Furs, is tracking the legislature. But, you know, my understanding is, you know, everybody involved, the state Senate, the governor, have both pledged not to close any Pioneer Homes. But we did get a note from a reader just pointing out that there have been some years of cuts originating in the Senate to the Pioneer Homes, or at least to the larger division and the department. And so that, you know, despite the Senate's, pledge, we don't intend to cut any. We would never, ever close Pioneer Homes. Their actions have kind of said otherwise. I haven't looked into that. I'm not sure exactly where the funding, how many cuts there have been, but.
But there has been some discussion about beds that remain unfilled in the Pioneer Home because of reductions in staffing, and that's one way to maybe not eliminate, but to reduce the effectiveness of the home. Okay.
That's right.
Well, and one of the difficult things about democracy is that we can make decisions 4 years ago, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, that have an impact today, and the people who are making those decisions are not held accountable, and the people who are making decisions about whether or not to find revenue today will not be held accountable if 5 years from now the Pioneer Home does have to close because of the decisions they make now.
Got that. Well, there's another topic that has been bubbling along and seems to be still to bubble into the next few weeks. And, of course, I'm talking about the school board's decision to not make a decision about outsourcing custodial and nutrition staff. Apparently, at the board meeting this week, they needed more time. And so that vote isn't coming up. There's some discussion, perhaps, that they're still dealing with some of the legal issues associated with the original RFP and beyond. Any comments about that particular topic?
So it's not off the table completely. It's just we need more time. Is that?
That's what I understand. So it will come back up in 2 weeks. So they didn't say we're going to drop this, forget about it, we're going away, but rather we're not going to address the issue at this meeting. We're postponing the addressing until 2 weeks from this past week's meeting.
Is there any sense of which way people are leaning?
I'm not aware of that. I think it's probably sufficient to say that whatever the concerns are, whether they're legal in nature or whether they involve some pressures that are being brought to bear on individual board members and they want more time, or just from internally the board itself saying we're not sure about this. I would like to suggest, I think that it's while it's not an exact parallel to the Pioneer Home, it still reflects the issues around finding a way to do what you need to do with less money. And the reality is the board is going to have to make choices about where if it receives less money, where cuts will be made. And I think the similarity that I see between outsourcing and the Pioneer Home is that when you come up with a number and you can attach a number for a cut, and you can attach that number to a particular program, it becomes a target that's easy to see, as opposed to removing a bit here, a bit there, to somehow sum up to the amount that you're required to reduce. Comments?
That makes a lot of sense to me, that's for sure. I know that there's a feeling out there. There's certainly a recognition that we've tried this in the past and we flipped on it in the past, but we're sort of down to where we need to decide where we want to spend our money. And that cut in particular, if it can save a few teachers and keep, you know, student count down, that is probably viewed as an okay priority, although in the bigger context, I don't think there's any great enthusiasm for doing this.
Mm-hmm. And
no, not at all. And Monica Goyette was at Assembly, the new superintendent, Monica Goyette, was at Assembly on Tuesday night and made a pretty grim forecast about the coming year. I mean, they're looking at, what, $10 or $11 million deficit. And she mentioned that there are instructional positions on the chopping block. I maybe, Mike, you remember, I want to say 30 or 40. Maybe 20 or 30 dozens of instructional positions.
Yes,
right.
There's talk of 37 student classrooms next year.
Yeah, I think the enormity of the cuts at this point is just being felt. And meanwhile, in Juneau, of course, there's a continuing standoff between basically the House and the Senate in terms of which direction to go with the other side of the ledger, which is the income monies, bringing monies in, and a reflection also of a further discussion of are these cuts that we're talking about still needing to be made this year in this way. Any sense about the Juneau situation? Anything that you have all picked up?
Sounds like a big old impasse.
Right. I'm not hearing anything that suggests that there's a breakthrough, but almost a settling in, a going to the mattresses and saying, okay, we're going to be here for 30 days. And we're really, the sense is that there may be some work being done, but that it won't be toward the end of that 30-day period that actual decisions will be made. But that's just my observation at this time.
Well, that's certainly how it goes typically, you know, down to the wire, and then the mad scramble for a vote or some kind of closure. I'm still not convinced that we'll see it. I think there's probably a sizable amount of folks in Juneau who would be happy to go home and not have a full solution on the table, even with a campaign coming up. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Well, unless we have something else that someone would like to bring up, I think we're coming to the close of another edition of Valley Edition.
Well, there is a science march this Saturday.
Oh, yes.
That will be an interesting event that will have a march celebrating science in the valley, the history of the agricultural and other kinds of science. This is, the Palmer thinks of itself as kind of a center for scientific inquiry. So it's tying into that. So they're going to march, and they're going to have stations where people can find out about different aspects around that.
Right. You'll be able to meet a scientist and have a conversation. And it's been a long time in preparation, and that's happening Saturday the 22nd. Do you have a time for that, David?
I do not.
I want to say it starts at 10.
I believe that's correct. I believe that's correct. And it'll be in downtown Palmer. Okay. Well, right. Once again, I would like to thank Zaz Hollander for calling in. Thank you, Zaz.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
Right. And I want to thank Mark Kelsey. Thank you, Mark, for coming in the studio.
Always good to be here.
And I want to thank David Cheesham for standing in and taking care of the board and making comments. Thank you, David.
Well, thank you.
All right. We'll be back next week.